Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Before we explore this week's story, I have a question for you. What about your stories? Whether it's a book project that wants to be birthed, deep, authentic writing to support your business, or a personal creative project you can't quite name yet, I'm here to support you through the entire writing process, from the initial ideation stage to the crafting of narrative and beyond. If you're ready to write memoir or a chronicle of the spiritual journey or a book that explores healing, nature, and the power of imagination, as well as the toughest truths of today, call on me. I walk beside you as you uncover the story that only you can tell. I'm a confidant who supports you through the challenges, and I'm your champion who will offer the nudges you need to get the words on the page. And yes, we hold space for the mythical and the magical all along the way. Visit my website, marisagowdy.com, to learn more about my writing coaching services and set up a free 30-minute consultation. Season 6, Episode 20, From Erosion to Regeneration. To Cesar sang the sea. Before we dive into this week's brief solo episode, I want to remind you that on June 25th, we're going to be gathering together for an exploration of your imaginal landscapes. Landscapes out of mythology and archetype that have both a deep personal resonance and a long-held archetypal magic. This event is open to all of my paid Myth is Medicine subscribers, as well as members of my long-running community, The Writer's Knot. During what will be a three-hour online retreat, we're going to be traveling across the imaginal realm, from cliff to cave to cottage to castle, and maybe a few other places in between. It's an opportunity to illuminate and reframe your own relationship with your creativity and your voice. You can expect guided journeys, a lot of time to write, and chances to dive deep into conversation with other myth-minded participants. I really like to think of this as a way to make these Knot Work stories into something very tangible and very real, because the imaginal realm is tangible and is real. So with that invitation to join me in a series of landscapes, I would like to tell you the story of a place where the land disappeared. Actually, I'm telling you a new version of a story I've told in greater length back in season 5, episode 19, When Tides Rise, Build Your Own Boat. It's the story of Cesar, who was known to be the very first person to set foot on Irish shores. She appears in the Lower Gavala Éireann, the Book of Invasions. And as the stories have it, she is the granddaughter of Noah. Yes, that Noah. But she was not invited onto his ark. Instead, she built three boats of her own. Those boats were crewed almost entirely by women, and they found their way to the far-flung island of Ireland to the west of Europe. Their story, ultimately, was not a happy one, but it left its mark, remembered now for its unique and beautiful strangeness. Scholars tend to dismiss it as a bit of Christian propaganda, because the monastic set wanted to give their island a bit of biblical pedigree. But I am still enraptured by the way that they added such strange details. Why a woman? Why ships full of women? Why Fintan McBocra, the shapeshifter, the magician, who was the one to survive the entire ordeal by becoming a salmon and diving deep below the rising Atlantic waters and emerging thousands of years later to tell the stories of Cesar and her clan. So without further ado, I'm going to offer you the prose poem I've written about Cesar and the sea. And then I'll tell you a bit more about why this story, why now. To Cesar, sang the sea, you would not be bound to their book, their verse, their single path to salvation. First their god, and then their father figurehead. They declared you would be unbound from their story. Wise child, you were destined to find your own way. You were bound to me, for the sea, in your small boats, buoyed by your brave dreams. They drove you from your home, little sister. I become home to you. With kelp and salt and current, I bind you to me. And when you weary of the pitch and roll, I set you upon a place you can call home for a while. You and your kin bind yourself to this soil and create your own devoted bonds to one another. It is a green place, all forest and rain. You have a season to plant some bean rows, and you steal an afternoon to lie with a lover in the bee-loud glade. All the while, I guard you, hold you. I hold the boundaries with my own unbound powers. It cannot last, though, little sister. I am deepest love and fathomless feeling, but I cannot be bound to the needs entangled in the short span of human life. I am unboundaried, and I swallow the liminal spaces of the shore until I devour the plains, the highlands, the very mountains themselves. Little sister, you couldn't know, but I weep as I rise. My sobs are waves creeping higher and higher from your ankles to your thighs to your throat. I hope that as the waters licked your ears, you can hear my voice in the echoes of the whale song. We are bonded. With me, you are unboundaried. I am lover of the world, mother of all creation. I am a cauldron that needs no spells of activation. I am the power that comes before and after every sacred flimsy story about the start of it all. I am it all. I am unbound, unboundaried, unworded, and yes, unworried and unbothered. Little sister, let us be bound by the unbounded nature of it all. Let us be the wordless tides that change it all. Come rise with me. Come fall with me, unboundaried, unbothered, and unworried, eternal, before and after all. Shinne, that is my take on the Cesar story from the perspective of the sea. So as I said, the story has really been in my imagination for some time, though I only really discovered it in the last few years. But one reason I'm really thinking of it now is I was recently participating in a program with Bard Mythologies. And as part of their Nine Waves series, they invited us to explore creation myths from Africa up through Europe. We were imaginatively following Cesar's own path, which began in her home place in Mero in Sudan. We moved across cultures, really diving into different stories and ways of seeing the start of it all. And of course, sometimes within those stories, there was contained the end of it all and a new beginning. And I wrote it in this way because I found that as I heard those stories of beginnings and endings and powerful patriarchal gods, I was so often drawn to the elements of creation, earth, air, fire, water, than I ever was to the stories that were heavy on human drama and the balances and imbalances of power. If you're a frequent Knotwork listener, that doesn't surprise you at all, right? So I needed to see if I could speak with the voice of the sea, to understand how she might feel about being the welcoming arms that took Cesar away from those who would not help her, and how she, Mother Ocean, might feel about being the force that would bring about Cesar's end. The more I play with this story, the more I let this story work upon me, I realize that this idea of the waters rising and swallowing the earth, swallowing creation, swallowing our ideas of culture and civilization are core to my work and to my own life in a way that's both old, 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 and also newly emerging. So I'm going to take a deep breath right here because this is not the sort of podcast where we include audio clips of drum rolls, but this might be a drum roll moment. But it's really tricky deciding when and how to name what you think is going to become the next big project for yourself. It might be an announcement that ends up fizzling out almost immediately. I may forget it even faster than you do. But there's also the possibility that the idea will stick, that it becomes the next big thing. And then in that case, I'm surely going to end up feeling foolish about the stumbling early descriptions of announcing a project like this. It's possible that if this is the thing I'm doing for the next several years, I'm going to wish that I had announced it all with more fanfare and clarity. But I work in immediacies. And I also realize that it's hard to root our work into anything right now. It's hard to know when the right moment of beginning is. And I also know that time itself is starting to feel strange and slippery. And then that might say the time for anything is now. Not necessarily with a sense of urgency that comes from scarcity, but with a sense of now being a sacred prayer, because we do not know what the future will hold. And one reason we don't know what the future will hold is because of erosion. And that's it. That's my idea that I'm going to be, I think, working with and that has been working with me for quite some time now. Erosion. Yeah. It's strange in my own mouth still, even as it feels a bit like coming to a beautiful, uncomfortable home. Because I've come to realize that for some time now, every story I tell and every conversation that I'm engaged in at a really deep level is ultimately about erosion. And this is true in conversations about culture, as well as about the fate of the earth itself, the fate of Mother Ocean herself. Because for me, erosion is terrible and inevitable, but it's also beautiful and generative, or it could be. Erosion could bring out new forms of creativity and inspire us to remake culture and ourselves as we work to restore the natural world in any way we can. Now, of course, erosion is core to the old myths, right? The floodwaters rise, everyone and everything is swept away. Perhaps a few survive, they must, because culture somehow is born again, right? A clean slate appears, a clean state, a new earth. And there's danger in these flood myths, of course. So many of them come from traditions with vengeful gods, with that sense of who is chosen and who is not. They're a way to keep people in line and force them to abide by rigid codes that fit the societal norms of the time. And at the same time, we know that waters rise around this world across millennia. There's a knowledge about deep time and the changes that our ancestors knew firsthand, the fears that they had, and also the stories of those who lived on beyond the great calamities and collapses. There's a universal threat in these flood stories, right? We were raised on tales of Noah and his ark and others. And of course, when you look beyond the Judeo-Christian tradition, you find so many others. But there's a personal threat for me in this idea of erosion and rising waters. I'm a child of Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It's a peninsula that was shaped by the retreat of glaciers during the last ice age. It's relatively new earth, only 25,000 years old. And now, as oceans rise and storms grow more powerful and more frequent, it feels sometimes like my home patch of earth is a child left alone to the sea wolves. And it isn't just the Cape where I was raised. It was also Prince Edward Island, where I would go up to visit family every summer throughout my childhood. Every year, we'd get there, sit with the aunts and uncles on the old front porch, and look out to the fishing inlet, which generally looked the same. And then we'd ask about what was going on down at the beach, down at the cliffs. What sacred, at least to us, monuments, Teacup Rock or Elephant Rock, or the amount of land in front of the lighthouse was still there. How much had been lost over the winters. We checked in on bits of the land like they were relations. Because we're all made by the land that cradles us, especially in our early years. But I realized it wasn't just an unconscious connection to Mother Earth for me, but it was really a conscious set of conversations. Erosion was part of my childhood. In elementary school, I did a project on the break in the barrier beach in Chatham, Massachusetts, and how the destruction of that barrier island threatened the fishing industry, as well as summer homes loved by generations. I remember poring over the newspaper clippings that my dad helped me collect, looking at the maps and the photos that charted the changes that came with every winter storm. I didn't end up studying oceanography or geology, and I definitely did not get into dealing in waterfront property. But at some fundamental level, that idea about the ways that the land is constantly being eaten away by the constant movement of the ocean made its way into my core understanding of what it means to be alive in this world. I wasn't necessarily certain that the earth was always going to be stable beneath our feet. This was a way to understand collapse at the personal micro level, long before this idea of polycrisis was part of the broader conversation. But here's one thing you know about erosion as a beach kid. It's not all about the vanishing earth. The sand that washes away from one place has to go somewhere. Often, it becomes a useless sort of shoal that just gets in the way of shipping lanes and the fishing fleets. But sometimes, it becomes a renewed stretch of shoreline. One beach loses and another gains. There's hope embedded in there somewhere. The sand doesn't go away. It's just moved elsewhere. All of that work is inspired by deep, deep wells of possibility, a belief that erosion and regeneration are always intertwined, that we are here to create from the ashes, always. I feel a sense of grounded optimism, even as I talk about a project that's about erosion, because I believe that there is so much that truly can be saved and reimagined. There's also much that needs to be consciously mourned, memorialized, and grieved at a really deep level. But in that process, we can learn and we can transform, perhaps much like Fintan McBokra, the shapeshifter who would come back to tell the story on another day in another way. We can learn from what came before. We can learn how to shore up the ground beneath our feet, so we're able to meet the storms that come to us next. So as I said in my drum roll moment, this is all new, and yet it's been something I've been working on for a very long time. I know it will continue to emerge and change and shift, and I hope you'll be with me for it here on the podcast, in my writing over on Substack, and hopefully in what's going to become a book over the years to come. For now, it just seems right to have shared this particular version of a creation story, which actually is an erosion story, and tell it from the voice not of the woman who watched the sea come to her, but from the voice of the ocean who did not want to swallow up a little sister of hers, but who was merely responding to the weather, to the climate, to the powers that be so much greater than the human will and imagination. Sesser's story, again, a creation story, is about erosion and disappearance, and it made way for another version of creation to arise again. And in that Irish tradition, there's five invasions that rise and fall before the sons of Mill, those first of the Gaels, arrive upon the shores and create the culture that we know now. Sesser's attempt is a failed one, but it is worthy. It's the story that needed to be tried and then composted, so that the next stories could arise. That sense of a woman and boats full of other women landing upon the shores offer us something rich for our imaginative possibility, for women, for men, for all folk, that there are other ways to tell the story. There are other ways to find solid ground beneath our feet, to shore ourselves up, to restore culture in ways that we've never imagined before. Because sometimes remembering and restorying is very much about creating anew, taking the sand that was elsewhere and forming it in new ways. So I hope that you'll consider joining us on June 25th. There we will certainly touch a little bit on this story, I'm sure, because as I lead any group thinking about landscapes, I also think about the disappearance of the earth beneath our feet and what we're building. Come and visit me at mythismedicine.substack.com for the information you need to get registered. I'm so grateful to you for your support of this podcast, the way that you share this with friends, the way when I meet you in person, this past week I was at the Way of the Rose annual feast day with Perdita Finn and Clark Strand and Sophie Strand. Perdita and Sophie, both of whom have been on the podcast many times before. But being in a crowd of folk I hadn't yet met before and knowing that the podcast had touched them in some small way was just another reminder that this work I've been able to do with so many of the folks who've come on the show with me, it's culture work. It is building up our shores, giving us a place to stand as we face the storms. I'm so grateful to all of you who listen, and I'm so grateful for your financial support, which helps me produce this podcast week after week. Mila Buikas, deepest thanks. Talk soon, and I hope to see you on June 25th. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.